Hello, and welcome to At Your End Step. My name is Morgan, and I'm here with Mike.
Hello.
And we have another fun-filled episode for you folks this week. Some exciting stuff. So we are in spoiler season territory, or whatever, you know.
Here there'd be spoilers.
Preview season, I guess, to be a little bit more correct with, you know, Wizards terminology. So we have, like, a fair amount of Throne of the Eldraine cards that we could talk about. But we also got some other announcements today. We're recording this on, the 4th?
Yeah,
September the 4th. And so there's a fair amount of things to really talk about as far as announcements go. We did have our first, you know, pretty big modern tournament that happened that we want to talk a little bit about, you know, because we had the big bannings and, of course, Stoneforge Mystic, and we had the MCQ at Comic Town. We also wanted to discuss just a little bit. So plenty to talk about on this episode. But before we jump into it, I do want to give a quick shout out to all of our patrons out there. Thank you so much for contributing to the show. I know we just got a new one. So thank you to Mike Moore for contributing to the show. We really do appreciate it. And you folks really, you know, keep the lights on here. You help us pay for the hosting of the show and everything like that, and it's been, you know, super helpful to have you there and really, it, you know, support the show in the ways that you do. So thank you so much. So let's talk about, basically, this was like a sort of announcement day, not just like a Throne of Eldraine sort of like kickoff. And it really started yesterday. We had this sort of countdown timer. We were getting cards every couple hours or so. It was kind of weird. It didn't make any sense. They had like a picture of a card and then a number, and it was counting down, but then there would be multiple sevens and stuff like that. I don't know. It was interesting.
From what I understand, archetypally, it would have been 12 12s, 11 11s, 10 10s, 9 9s.
Sevens, yeah, but
you know, seven magical drummers drumming.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
So, six.
But it wasn't. It didn't function.
Pipers.
Piping, yeah.
Yeah, five.
Lords a-leaping?
Golden Rings.
Oh, no. It's, I forget how many Lords a-leaping there are.
I have no idea. After five, I'm all making it up anyway. I know there's some maids that are milking, and there's
so a lot of birds.
A lot of birds.
I mean, we got a fair amount of birds in our preview cards, so there you go. this was all leading up to the big announcement stream they did today, which they started off in the weirdest way possible. I don't know if you heard about this. The first 30 or so minutes of, I don't know if it's that long, but the beginning of this stream was someone baking, like making gingerbread cookies, basically. It was like a, like if you're scrolling through like your Facebook and you have like these cooking videos that just have like a calming music track in the background side with someone bake something. And that's what it was. It was just the weirdest thing.
I mean, maybe people thought it was soothing. Maybe they accidentally got those,
you know, I listened to it in the background, and it was very, very soothing.
So they had some like ASMR going on. Maybe you got those like food junkies who were just like switching streams, like, oh man, making cookies. And then they were like, wait, magic cards have food now? And then they just stayed.
Yeah, I wish.
Maybe they got all those fans.
Maybe. They just got, this is what this magic's about, eh? Baking.
it's either Magic the Food Network or that movie The Visit by M. Night Shyamalan. I don't know which one it's supposed to be, but it's probably closer to the Shyamalan movie.
Sure. During the stream, they had a bunch of different sort of announcements. They obviously showed off some more Throne of Eldraine cards, and they talked a little bit about everything. But let's focus on Eldraine first, and then move into some of the other things that were talked about. So leading up to this, we got some pretty big name cards, some pretty big story focus. Oh, another thing
the
book did come out today. I swear to God, guys, we're going to record the part three to the Greg Weisman novel.
I believe you.
I promise you. I'm going to make that promise. It'll happen one day.
It's now been longer since I've read it, like, than many things in Magic. So
it's true. It's true.
But I haven't downloaded this one yet, but I'm going to. So.
Yeah, I've actually, for early impressions from people that I trust, say that it's actually good. So,
like your father? Like,
no, like people like Vorthos's in the community on Twitter. The initial Twitter response from like people from the Vorthos cast and stuff like that said it was entertaining.
They
let
the Vorthos flame to know that.
Yeah, exactly.
Gondor said thumbs
correct.
Up.
Exactly. So, but one of the big cards, I mean, we got Garrick. Garrick's back.
Hey.
He's still sick.
Yeah, he's some kind of huntsman now.
Yeah, So the best part about all of the, you know, cards that we got during the countdown previews where they all were all very easy to identify tropes, especially if you are aware of Disney movies, because we got things like Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, a bunch of different Goldilocks
Xmas Jackson Flaxen Waxen.
Yes, Flaxen Invader is the actual name of the card, but these cards sort of their take on these classic, you know, fairy tales, and Garrett kind of fits into that because he's the huntsman, I think he's actually pretty good. He's very interesting. So it's Garrick Cursed Huntsman, 4 generic black green, so 6 mana for a legendary planeswalker, Garrick. And he has a 0 ability, create 2/2 black and green wolf creature tokens with, when this creature dies, put a loyalty counter on each Garrick you control. Has a -3, destroy target creature, draw a card, and a -6. You get an emblem with creatures you control get +3/+3 and have trample. And it starts off at 5. Well, obviously this isn't tick up traditionally, but I mean, making 2 tokens and not losing anything is good. Like we know that that is typically a good thing to see on a planeswalker, is making a token and not losing any sort of loyalty. I mean, look at Elspeth is I know that there were comparisons to that card in this facet. Obviously, yeah. Not taking up is kind of awkward, but this card also theoretically can ultimate the next turn that you play it, which is very enticing. And giving all of your creatures overrun. It's overrun. Yeah. That's pretty good.
I appreciate that he, despite the cursing, still cares so much about his puppies.
Yeah.
He reminds me of the hug bear from The Adventure Zone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you threw my wolf into the fire.
Right.
And I got a loyalty. So
yeah, exactly. He gets, yeah.
The art we got for it is the collector's edition art, right?
Or there is the other art. I like the other art better.
Okay. Because the collector's, the extended frame art looks like a really bad action figure. Yeah. Because it's got covering over like his left wrist and like his the hood up, so it just looks like... It's like if you're like me and you were poor as a kid and you got your action figures from the dollar store, they had to make it look natural why it didn't have points of articulation. And this Garrick's like, we've hidden all the points of articulation, so the toy can be a real cheap.
No, the actual art that you'll see in like a traditional like draft pack is released. I think it looks better. So check that out if you don't like the full art.
I gotta tell you, he's kind of, I don't think he's looking that unhealthy though.
You know what? He's not. And I don't
like, he doesn't look as bad as he did the last time we saw him.
And he looks pretty Apex Predator. Yeah,
like Apex Predator had, now granted, I get why they moved away from this, because he had full Batman and Robin Bane syndrome where he just had like the weird venom veins. It's just like, I need this sauce.
Yeah, it was that weird part where he broke Jace's back in half. I didn't get that, but
he's also featured in the trailer. In the trailer he looks downright spry, like he's eating cookies.
He is eating cookies. So that trailer, man, there are a lot of people that really love that trailer. And that trailer is buck wild, but I just couldn't stop thinking about Shrek when that trailer was going on.
I think that's a personal problem. How often do you find yourself thinking about Shrek?
You know, I don't have to tell you the truth. I'm not under oath here. Listen, what I do in my personal time is no one else's business but my own.
Well, that got real awkward. it definitely was Shrek-esque.
Yes.
I guess this means they're going to continue using modern music.
Assumedly.
If you haven't seen it, it definitely looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it looks good. You know, the animation quality's there.
And I do like the conceit of the trailer. Like, it does a good job of setting up Eldraine as a plane.
Yeah.
And then also setting up that, like, Garrick's just kind of here.
Yeah, he just
we have some insight into what he's doing, or
right?
Why
right.
He's there,
and it actually kind of involves the other new planeswalker that we got. We actually got introduced to this planeswalker last week,
yeah, Willy.
But not the cart, yeah,
Willy,
not Willy,
the orca,
no, stop it. Do you have Oko up? Can you read Oko?
I can. Yoko says, +1, destroy target, really good British band.
That's not what that
says. Oh, my bad. Oko, Thief of Crowns, is 1 generic blue-green for 4 loyalty, legendary planeswalker, Oko. +2, create a food token. +1, target artifact or creature loses all abilities and becomes a green elk creature with base power and toughness, 3/3. -5, exchange control of target artifact or creature you control and target creature and opponent controls with power 3 or less. So when this got spoiled, we didn't know what food was, so we should probably identify food.
Yeah, so food is a token, but also can be a like
it can be like subtype. A subtype of an artifact.
Correct.
And it is a subtype of an artifact.
Yes. And it has the ability pay to tap it and sacrifice it to gain 3 life.
Gain 3 life. Yeah. Yes. So this is you eating it. Yeah. So he can turn food into creatures to then jokingly give your opponent, and when your opponent looks at the creature they've given you, it's like, but this is food, and you're like, all animals are food, and then you're like, what? And then they cue Garrick's music.
That's true. I was in the show chat, I was wondering when the big errata was going to happen when we subclass all of the edible animals as food.
As food.
Because
yeah, squirrels are back, but they're also food. I don't know.
That's true. Squirrel food.
Oko certainly seems interesting, both as a planeswalker and as a character. We didn't talk about Oko.
Yeah, Oko is like the punk rock all-star, down with the patriarchy, destroying all those people. You know, Oko is eat the rich as a planeswalker.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm here for it. I'll be perfectly honest.
There's been a little bit of criticism of Oko, and that's because
Oko's a thirst trap as well.
Yeah, Oko's a thirst trap. He's a buff boy. Now, granted, we don't know that this is what Oko looks like.
That's
Oko
true.
Is a shapeshifter.
If you were a shapeshifter, I mean,
you just look like him. H-I-M.
Yeah.
but the only people it has spawned a bit of a conversation last week about like body types in Magic, and how we don't have them. There's one body type.
I mean, and you can even extend that into like fantasy as a whole.
Yeah, like, for sure. And like, I get it. Like, there's definitely some explanation for like these people are fit for this reason. I saw there was an article on Hipsters of the Coast, and they were like, Amonkhet's one of the ones that they like were mad about, and they're like, where are all the other people? And I'm like, oh, they're dead. Like,
yeah, they are.
Amonkhet was designed by Bolas to do one thing, and that was to make muscly people. Like, that's it. So that one I'm not upset about. What it serves actual.
When you say it like that, it sounds like Amonkhet is like.
Yeah, it's the Oakland Athletics in the 80s.
Like, it just sounds like it's Bolas's gym.
It's Bolas's gym. It's but like, I also know that, you know, wars had people of all kinds, and like, yeah, I'm a chunky guy, but I could fight for my country, and I could also put on some crappy armor and a leather jerkin and go fight. I'll die. Me personally, I know this, but.
As Game of Thrones has taught us, they're breastplate extenders.
That is true. That is true. But make sure it's on correctly before you go on hunt boars.
That's true.
Rest in peace forever.
Yeah. Also, don't drink poison wine.
Well, that's a thing. But yeah, so I thought it was at least interesting. But I also agree that, like, yeah, if I'm a shapeshifter and, like, this is one of the shapes I can choose, I can choose to be who I am now, or I can choose to just be, like, I don't know, like, super muscly, but for some reason the only clothing I can create out of thin air is a tiny jacket. I'm gonna wear that tiny jacket. Like,
this is what I got.
So Oko is certainly interesting. Feels a little bit narrow, but I mean, ostensibly makes a stream of 3/3s that attacks each turn, or, you know, it can ultimate the next turn. I say ultimate the -5, you know, to do some things.
Yeah.
And food is some amount of card advantage, not much. Life is a resource, and it's a permanent, and you can do lots of interesting things with permanence. It's certainly not a clue or treasure, but it accounts for something. So,
and to be fair, there are other cards in the set that play
really
off
well
of food,
yeah,
like as being like a resource.
The biggest downside I have to this 3-drop and some of the other cards we can even talk about is that, like, we have to examine these in a world where, once again, we don't have land war elves, and unless we get a 1-mana dork spoiled, which I don't think we're going to.
Not a permanent one.
Yeah. Because there's a
sorcery card that generates. I know, but that doesn't even work. The Golden Goose is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, Golden Goose, yeah. So, I don't. Yeah, I don't know. We have to, you know, if I knew that I could jam this in a deck with Llanowar Elves, I'd be much more interested in it for sure.
Yeah, we're not getting a one mana accelerant.
No, we're not.
That's a permanent one mana accelerant.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, like, this does play well with the Golden Goose.
It does. It, you know, there's a couple of food creatures for sure that it plays just fine with.
All creatures are food. We already established this.
Gilded Goose is a single green for a 0/2 flying creature. When it enters the battlefield, create a food token, and then you can tap and sacrifice a food to add one mana of any color, and then you can generic and green, tap, create a food token. So this is a one mana dork that does make a mana on turn two, but that's it. It is not Llanowar Elves. But this can chain into Orko, and Orko can feed the goose.
Orko. I don't know who owns He-Man these days. I don't know if it is Hasbro or not, but they're going to come after us.
Okay, I am a big Beatles fan. I can't in good conscience refer to Orko. I just can't. I can't. I know it's not Yoko, but I don't know. Maybe she could be a shapeshifter. I don't know.
Again, I don't. I think now we're going to get targeted by Yoko Ono's people.
Yeah, probably. It's all right. Here's the thing. I think that, like, if she was a shapeshifter, that'd be really cool and impressive. I'm not using shapeshifter as an insult. I'm using it as, like, an awe thing.
Okay. You know fair enough. I mean?
Like,
fair enough.
One of my favorite X-Men was Morph. Now, he lost his mind there for a little bit, but, like...
Yeah, he had a bad time.
He did. Maybe he became a planeswalker and he became Orko.
You're the worst.
Rufio?
No.
Okay, come on. He kind of looks like Rufio.
Yeah, a little bit.
If Rufio was allowed to grow up.
Yeah, so...
Oh, spoilers.
Yeah, Rufio and Domri had very similar character arcs, huh?
Oh, no, they did. They both got stabbed by British men. That's not true.
No. Anyway, so we got some more like storybook cards, which are going to be the sort of special treatment that some of
I think all the adventure cards. We should probably talk about adventure as a mechanic.
Yeah. We could jump into mechanics now. I don't think we need to talk about any of the other, you know, cards at this point in time.
No,
unless to illustrate mechanics.
Yeah,
themselves.
We have plenty of time to talk cards, and we got a lot of. Again, they switched up a little. We got a lot of commons and uncommons to sort of build flavor, but we can definitely talk about
it. Yeah, so the first mechanic that we do have is adventure, or adventures, which are the sort of the storybook cards that we saw. You know, the first one we saw was Flaxen Invader, which is Goldilocks.
Flaxen.
Yes, I can't. I will. I can barely talk. But the first example that we have here in the article is Beanstalk Giant, which is 6 generic and a green for a creature giant. And it says Beanstalk Giant's power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. But wait, it also has this weird other side to it that says adventure. And it says Fertile Footsteps. 2 generic and a green, sorcery, adventure. Search your library for a basic land card and put it into the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So, and it says, then exile this card. You may cast the creature later from exile. So basically how this card works is it's a split card. It's a sorcery and creature split card. So you can cast the sorcery half and resolve the sorcery half and then exile it upon resolution. And then later on, the creature comes back from its adventure and then you have a creature. So it's fairly simple. Casting the adventure is what triggers the ability to cast the creature. Resolving the adventure is what triggers the ability to cast the creature from exile. So you're not just like putting these into exile somehow and then casting creatures from them. And you have to play the adventure.
Oh man, I can pitch one of Horse of Will. And then,
yeah, you can't do that. That would be quite an adventure. So you will have to potentially track these things. I don't know how often that'll be an actual concern. I don't know how often there will be things going to exile. Of course, we do have Leyline of the Void in Standard, but I don't know how much of our format's going to be graveyard-centric, so how important is Leyline going to be? There's a whole bunch of contextual questions that need to be answered before.
And we still have things like Concrete Tribunal and things like that, but I should be noted, I don't know. We'll have to see also how many of these are playable. I don't know how many of the ones that have been spoiled so far are.
That's true.
Super
That's
playable true. Just yet. So,
I mean, I'm sure they will be fairly reserved on how these are actually like playable because they are pretty consistently like two for ones.
That is definitely true.
So I imagine them being fairly reserved, you might have a couple of them that are playable, and then it's not going to be that big of a deal.
I still have some questions about them. Because, you know, when we get the FAQ, then that'll make more sense. You know, it says specifically when it's in your deck, it's only a creature. So it only really, you only get to know the sorcery side when you're actually casting it. But I do wonder what like CMC looks like on the stack. And even in play for the creature, right? Because if I cast a sorcery, there are two CMCs on that card. You know, and we just did a lot of shifting with those things. Did Aftermath work like that? Aftermath had the CMC combined, right?
For certain things.
For certain things, yeah. So I just want to know how the FAQ, like, I want to know how the CMC will work on this.
I imagine, that's an interesting question. I imagine, like, if we had a... sort of a Dark Confidant effect, because that was the thing we won't have one.
What Rune Raider
that rotates out?
You're right, it's Ixalan.
But I'm sure,
but we could see another one.
And it realistically, like, that'll need to be explained.
Yeah, I just want to see the FAQ, that's all. So next up is Adamant.
Yes.
Which is, if at least three of a single color of mana was spent to cast this spell, it enters with a +1/+1 counter or an effect, I should say.
Yeah, it does the thing.
So the color can be whatever it is on the card. So an example here is Ember Wrath Paladin, which is three generic and a red for a 4/1 with haste. It has Adamant. If at least three red mana was spent to cast a spell, then it enters with +1/+1 counter. Yeah. And we see an example of a red one, two red ones, and a white card as well.
Yeah. So, I have to say... some things I've noticed from Eldraine, they bought a lot of WoW mounts because they're riding all kinds of things. This Embereth Paladin is riding like a big lizard. Could be a dragon, I guess, but...
What are the name of the little lizard things you ride in WoW?
I can't remember. Kodos?
Kodos. I was going to say Kavu, but that's magic. No. Kodos, yeah.
Yeah.
Aw, I miss my great white Kodo mount. It moves so fast.
Well, there's another card that's I think it's just exclusively in the Brawl decks, but it just looks like I literally posted it. I was like, you and the boys before mounting up and raiding Ulgrimmar, because it's like there's a cat and like a big cat and a unicorn and some Pegasus. I don't know, it's all wild.
Fun fact, I've never raided Ulgrimmar because I've always played Horde.
Oh, fair enough. Well, I couldn't say raiding Stormwind because they didn't have like Horde mounts. They were fairly aligned.
No, I agree.
So I had to go with the card art.
Yeah, you're good. So Adamant though seems to be a fairly generic functional mechanic, but we got one other bit of information.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next and how that might play into Adamant.
Yeah.
I think like something like Slaying Fire might be fine.
Yeah, I think Slaying Fire might make it into the battle box, which two generic and a red for an instant, it deals 3 damage to any target, so that's, what is it, open fire, right?
Yeah.
But if you Adamant and pay at least 3 red mana, it deals 4 damage instead, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So.
And the last mechanic is food, so.
Yeah, well, I do want to mention Bake into Pie as like the sort of 2 generic black destroy target creature, create a food token, so like baked into a pie. Free pies for everybody.
Yeah. And again, only all of these cards are going to be very reminiscent from, you know, Grimm's Fairy Tales, classic Athorian thing. So there's a ton of stuff that you'll be like, oh, and like I get that. I know what that's from. It's exciting. So we also got the rest of the Brawl decks. So we know what's going to be in them. I think we know most of the cards. I think most of the cards were revealed.
They were. And okay. Here's the thing. You can know them too.
Yeah. You can actually play with them right now on Arena. It's part of a special event. It's I forget what the event's actually called, but you can pick, you to enter into it.
It better not be called the Brawl Invitational.
No, it's not. TM. But you enter into it, you pick one of the decks, and you fight people.
Play some Brawl. So I like that because it's a cool way to get people excited about new cards, but also a really nice secret way for them to sort of like open test the Brawl queues a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty cool. 100%. And the world decks are definitely interesting. I don't know how much we'll talk about the precons on here, but it does seem that, like, as frustrated as I was by the Signet, most of the other cards are not that bad. We did get Command Tower, but I like Command Tower more than I like the Signet. Like, Command Tower is the kind of card that I do like in every deck because it's a land. It doesn't really take up a slot like the Signet does. So I pre-ordered 4 before knowing what the lists were, and after looking at the list, I'm not unhappy about it. You get you get a shock on the temple in each one too, which is pretty. I mean, that's pretty good
For sure. They talked about, they have an article. They talked about how they had outside people help develop the actual Brawl decks, which I think is pretty important. The event on Brawl on Arena is the Brawl Court.
Oh, nice. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I do want to say that out of the 4 Brawl commanders, my favorite is the Sweet Noble Dragon, which is another new creature type.
Yes, Noble.
Which is interesting because we had all of this Innistrad, and we have like Falcon Wrath Noble. I guess that's going to become a Noble now.
I would hope.
So, but this is Korvald, Fey Cursed King, 2 generic and a Jund, so black, red, green, for a 4/4 legendary creature Dragon Noble with flying. When it enters the battlefield or it attacks, sacrifice another permanent. Whenever you sacrifice a permanent, put a +1/+1 counter on Korvald and draw a card. So, man, Korvald eats a lot of food.
He's so hungry.
He's just the hungriest dragon. And I just kind of, this is a good trope for me. I like this idea of just like the opulent noble dragon that everyone's got to feed.
Oh, I think like this was definitely a man, right?
Oh, you think so? Oh, Fey Cursed.
Because he's Fey Cursed. He's definitely insane. A dude. Yeah, that guy done got turned into one of them dragons.
Yeah, this is one of the ones I'm interested to see if there is like an alternate art one in the collector's edition. Like, this is the one card that I'm like, ooh.
That you might chase.
I gotta tell you, I've been watching the Dark Crystal prequel, which shout out to, it's very good. But like, this is a Skeksis. Like, this is what it is. It's just like, bring me food.
Apparently souls that you crack open like a Gatorade.
Yes, it is delicious Glacier Freeze. Oh my gosh, now I want. Why'd you do this to me? I need some soul lessons.
I'm thirsty too, man. I do like there's a Mardu Knight who is Sir Gwyn, hero of Ashvale. They have Sirs, so it's SYR. So there's
why is that?
I don't know. I don't know why they didn't like. I thought they would go with like in Game of Thrones it's written out as SER for Sir. Obviously we have SIR. I don't know whether they want to be different, but I'm here for it, I guess. This works well with the giant hammer, right? Because all of your equipment you control have equipped to knights as being 0.
Yeah, that's in the Brawl deck too, right?
Yeah, that's pretty
good.
It's hammer time.
Huh? Vigilance, menace. I'm gonna equip this up +10 and let's go to time.
Yeah, let's go to town.
There we go. That's what. Let's go to time.
It's hammer time.
It's hammer time.
But we go to town.
Let's go to time. It's hammer town.
Hammer town.
Stop. Hammer town.
I think like if you are interested in this to kind of get started with getting into Brawl, I think this is a good place to start.
Yeah, when you look at the mana bases there. I think this is where, compared to Commander, Brawl precons really can shine, because those mana bases aren't bad. Oh. Like the 3 color ones, you're going to want to get more shocks, and you're going to want to get the rest of your temples. But like, a bunch of the lands are rotating out, so we don't know what we're going to get in Eldraine as of yet. But like, you're going to be playing Gates, you're going to be playing the gain life lands from the core, and they have those in there. So that does make me happy, because I was worried about like. One, how expensive would they be? And they are in that $15 to $20 range. You know what I mean? I think I pre-ordered for like $65 or something like that for all 4. They have solid mana bases. So I trusted Gavin when he said that to me at Gen Con that they were how they were going to be. And good on. They paid off.
Yeah.
So what other announcements do you want to talk about? Any other cards you want to talk about?
I don't think there's any cards that I want to talk about. I do want to talk about the upcoming sets.
Okay, so we got some announcements.
So yeah, so this was, like I said, a kind of a little bit of a mini announcement. Okay? And let's see here. I'm going to pull up some pictures that I took because they don't have it on the website, which is...
Yeah, it was real weird.
Just the best. but we got what's going to be the future of Standard. And unfortunately we were a little bit right. We were a little bit right in like the easiest thing that we could have possibly called. So the next set is going to be Return to Theros set. It's going to be Theros Beyond Death. So this set, they said in the announcement stream that it is going to be more focused on the underworld of Theros, which makes sense because we know that's where Elspeth is. And I imagine this is kind of where we get a finishing out of where what we're going to do with Elspeth. Is she going to be rescued from the underworld? And kind of where that leads us. I know, Mike, you kind of have some mixed opinions about Theros.
I mean, like, Theros was good to me. I guess I shouldn't dislike it.
That's true. That's true.
Now, Theros still as a block for storytelling still fell flat to me. And, like, I worry that, like, maybe they'll go about Theros differently. But, you know, we're looking at a top-down set right now that is, like, I mean, super top-down. Like, every fantasy trope, like fairy tale trope we're getting sort of as a pure top-down design. So going then right after that to another top-down plane that didn't always do top down that well, had some clunky things like, you know, enchantment matter stuff that was like, I don't know. Theros, Mark Rosewater says that Theros was a more beloved set than I think it was, and I get it, I'm just one person, but yeah. I don't I haven't interacted with people who have been like, man, give me Theros.
Yeah, and maybe now,
give me Elspeth, don't get me wrong, give me Underworld Elspeth, I'm down for that. Elspeth's great, but yeah, I don't know. But so I told Morgan for the cast, if Koth is the one breaking Elspeth out of the underworld to take her back for help to New Phyrexia, then great. Yeah. But that's not coming ever, apparently.
Koth watch, our watch is over. Well, that's what we're hoping.
We've been so patient.
So that's going to be in this winter. After that, we have Ikoria, Lair of Behemoth. So this is a new plane that we have not been to. It is described as a monster plane, and realistically, I'm thinking of that as like a kaiju,
right? Plane. Like, has to be.
That's what I kind of get the feeling of. It has one of the apparently most buck wild mechanics that Mark Rosewater was saying. So I'll tentatively be here. I just assume we're going to be collecting and assembling pieces of Exodia. That's what we're going to be doing.
I'm interested in this only because I have to assume it's not going to be cosmic horror. Not that like the Cthulhu is kaiju, because that's not
the case. Yeah.
But most of the time we've done giant monsters, it has been cosmic, Lovecraftian. I'm excited for like a kaiju set, like just like people like who just have to live around these giant monsters who maybe fight every now and then, like that. That's kind of cool to me. I like that concept. And I have to assume it's probably where we'd see Kiora again, just being like,
yeah, I mean,
I really like this.
I don't know how we wouldn't. Like, her name is almost, like, in
there. Oh, is it? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, it's weird, huh?
I noticed.
Yeah. We all know. We all noticed.
But her home plane is confirmed to Zendikar, right?
Correct.
Okay, so, like, that's not... All right, anyways.
After that, we have Corset 2021, which is apparently going to be Teferi focused, so...
Oh, man.
Yay!
It's a Fairy Hero Dominaria reprint confirmed.
probably not, but the set symbol is like Teferi's puzzle box, which is cute. I'm
excited to see the crunch, like the crunch of the Planeswalker
Sport. Yeah, I assume that's where we're going to get it.
Here's what I'm assuming that is, and this is conjecture, but I sat in on the Dominaria panel at Gen Con, and they discussed how the second set in the Dominaria block, which was scrapped because I went away from that, was supposed to be about Teferi bringing back Zalfir.
And
we got a little taste of that when he was looking, you know, he was going through that temple essentially that Urza left behind. You know, have some of these power stones. So I'm assuming that they're going to take that story for Teferi and put that into court. Because like Teferi helped with the Gatewatch, and his goal has been to bring back Zalfir. So it makes sense for him to be like, hey, it's time for me to bring these people home.
Yeah, I'm in for that.
That set was also supposed to be heavily knight themed, which I'm assuming they cannibalized a little bit because, like, obviously Dominaria had knights, and it's awkward that they're rotating the set as we're getting a whole subset of knights. In Eldraine, but that might be part of it, and I could see knights being a sub theme in the core set too to overlap with Eldraine.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
The Zalfira knights are sweet. You're talking about maybe flanking. Yeah, let's get flanking back.
I don't think we're gonna do that.
I don't think so either. No. But.
And then the last set that they've talked about, which is going to be coming, you know, next fall when rotation happens again, is Zendikar Rising. And they described this as, you know, we don't have Eldrazi anymore. They're gone from the plains. So this is going back to Zendikar roots. This is adventure world.
Oh, I get it.
And so he literally said, if you really enjoyed the original Zendikar, then
whole one set of it.
Then Zendikar Rising is going to be something that you're going to be interested in.
I'm just being honest. Like, it went from Zendikar World Break to Rise of the Eldrazi, and then we went back. We're fighting Eldrazi, so they're really romanticizing a set and a half, essentially.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I understand what they're doing, but I could see this being another time where they have to do the thing they don't like to do and give us fetch lands.
Oh man, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Because we'll have Shocks rotating out, right. So Shocks will be gone. So mana bases aren't going to get too crazy. There was there's a land with a swamp subtype.
That's going to be a cycle as well.
Probably. So it's like, I think they can do it. They know that they have to print out Shocks at a high volume. They know that it's not good enough to put them in master sets, and they're not doing master sets for quite some time, right. Assumedly. So where else are they going to put them?
No, I don't disagree. They just hate them in standard so much.
I know, but
without shock lands, it gets better for sure.
Yeah.
That's long time conjecture for sure. I don't know. I know we need to balance going to new planes with old planes. I'm sad we're not getting Kaldheim, like we were hoping.
Yeah.
But man, going back to Zendikar immediately does not feel earned to me.
It has been 5 years. It'll be 5 years since we went to battle.
There for 10 minutes. Like, Nissa goes to Dominaria and she goes, "No, I need to go back to Zendikar and heal it." And you're telling me from the time that she left Dominaria to go back to Zendikar to the time she's called back to Ravnica for War of the Spark, enough has been done on the plane. Hell, we see it in the core set because Yarok's there. Like, things aren't healed yet, but it's fine. Whatever. Big mana. I get it. You literally gave us Karn digging up a nuclear warhead to take it back to New Phyrexia. And you're like, "Nah, we're still not going to go back there. Let's go back to Zendikar for a third damn time." Sorry. Darn.
You get one.
Didn't mean to do a cuss. It's fine. And like, it's just going back to these sets a third time before some planes have seen, a second time. I know Zendikar is popular and that's for them. If that's what they want to do, it's all great, but it makes me sad. I think Koth Watch. I will keep watch.
Yep.
I will keep my vigil.
It's all right. Listen, we put the word out there to get some updates on Koth. For the Vorthos cast.
Don't let us down, Brian.
Yeah, Brian will hold it up.
Don't let us down.
He'll keep his word. He's part of Koth Watch.
He keeps watch as well. We take our vows by the old tree.
Yep.
And
still believe in the old gods.
The old gods.
I think technically the old god is Karn.
I think the old god's Memnarch, and that's not great.
That's not great. Can it be Karn?
So
Karn created,
yeah,
the whole thing.
I mean, to be fair, if it was Karn and then it was like the father of machines, then it's like the new god the same as the old god, so that works. But
yeah,
I don't know, but yeah, I mean it's cool to get announcements for new sets, but I don't know. I'm not looking at that list. Theros has me. Meh. I'm glad for Elspeth. Johnny hopefully gets to give her a big old hug, and give her a cloak back.
Yeah.
But Zendikar does not excite me. Yeah. So if it excites you, that's great. Don't let me bring that down. I really want a new Phyrexia, or to just, I don't know, not go back to these places so quickly. Go back to this well. You say 5 years, sure. Maybe that's longer than I think. But I mean, Battle for Zendikar exists on Arena. Like, it was coded into that. So like, it's still recent enough.
I think that's the downside is a failure when we went back to a plane. Like, if they were saying, like, we're going to go back to Innistrad, like, it's too soon to go back to Innistrad.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong. But let's say that it's been 5 years, and the next time they say they're going back to Innistrad, like, are you going to be excited about it?
So I would say I would be more excited about Innistrad, because I don't think Innistrad's return was a failure. And gotcha. I think that they were able to do a cool thing with Innistrad, keep it horror, but change the scope of horror from Victorian horror to Gothic horror. It was a fairly strong transition.
A cosmic horror.
That's a Gothic horror.
He's a Gothic, yeah.
Cosmic. I think the Battle for Zendikar was just so flat for so many reasons, and also led to just like some really bad gameplay when you think about Eldrazi Winter and things like that. So I don't know. Maybe I'll feel better about it. Like, we're excited to go back to Ravnica again because Return to Ravnica block was so strong. And yeah, you're definitely right. Zendikar, you know, Battle for Zendikar in Oath of the Gatewatch doesn't have that strength to build off of. But again, they're not trying to build off that strength. They're trying to build off of just Zendikar. So correct. We'll see.
Yeah, I think, like, if that's their
Goblin Guide confirmed.
I think if that's their focus, then that's a good focus to have. I think, like, focusing on going back to that, so sort of Indiana Jones-esque feeling, like, I think it's a good thing to tap into.
I agree, that would be cool. I don't know, I don't want to talk about this forever because we but like, how do you have Indiana Jones feelings on a plane that, like, was drained of almost all of its life force? Like, where's the mystery at?
I don't know.
Like, don't get me wrong, or correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't at least one entire continent dusted?
I have no idea.
I thought, like, was it Bail Again? Wasn't Bail Again literally entirely destroyed?
Potentially.
You're gonna have to show me how that grows back. At least for the mending, you had a plane that was leaking mana, and then it was able to grow back. But here, it was consumed. It was siphoned out of the plane into the I can't remember what they call the space in between the planes now. That's
a blind eternity.
Thank you. I was going to say into the outer space, and that's not it.
into the dang outer space.
So I don't know where you get it back. I don't know where it comes from.
I don't know. And to be fair, like, we do have a... See, this is where it's like, I wish the core set would focus on, like, Nissa, right? Because then, like, you could lead into that. You could say, like, this is Nissa, this is, like, what she's doing, and this is how she's healing the plane and stuff like that, and then lead into it.
She got this cool backpack that sprays water to get rid of pollution, and if you flip the switch, it can also spray mana, and there's a bunch of pollution all over your Zendikar, but she's got to wear the backpack and clean the pollution with the mana water.
It's super Nissa Sunshine. Yeah, I get it. Super
Nissa Sunshine. She got that flood.
She got the flood from Dr. Egad. She went to the plane of Ildel. I forget what.
I was going
to
say Muerto, so that's not it. Oh my god.
Isle Delfino.
Delfino. Oh man, that's some good overworld music.
Yeah. Yeah. Underappreciated Super Mario game.
Yeah, I've been talking about that one for a while. I need to play it again.
Yep.
Good times. Magic cards.
Magic cards, yeah. But yeah, that's all the kind of big and exciting, you know, stuff that was happening within, Magic as far as, like, Throne of Eldraine stuff, you know, new stuff coming out soon. What standards, where we're going to be going in standard. And, that's... You know, really, really, really exciting. So, I don't know. I don't think there's anything else, community wise that we want to touch on at this point in time. We obviously covered a lot of stuff. Check out some of the cards that have been, like, officially revealed. A lot of them are really, really, like, cool and very flavorful. We're definitely going to be talking a lot about them in the set review when it comes out. So, but yeah, from there, let's go ahead and move into competitive. Before doing so, I do want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Comic Town. I know that there's going to be a Modern IQ, I think, that's going to be coming up. So definitely go to worldofcomictown.com and check under your events to see all the exciting events that are going to be happening here soon. All right.
Speaking of exciting events from Comic Town,
yeah, so
we played in one.
We did. We played in the Modern MCQ that was held. That was held last Saturday, technically, and it was a 120 person event, and it was the first, you know, big event locally after the changes to Modern. So it was, I think we were all pretty excited to see what we're going to see there. And some of us were playing meta decks, and some of us were playing with Stoneforge Mystic. So I'll talk about my day first because it was real quick. But I played Tron. I played Mono Green Tron, and I felt like it was it was sort of the level zero deck. It was the deck that was kind of like, well, nothing really happened to this. You lost, some of your worst matchups are the ones that lost out or were changing, and then you know, you have the advantage of if people were shifting more towards, you know, the sort of mid-range play, then you could probably take advantage of that with your going, you know, you going over the top of them.
Yeah, and, for sure.
There was a lot of Tron there. It was very present in the room, so it seemed like, you know, a lot of people had the same idea as me. Again, you know, not super surprising. And, you know, with that being the case, it just didn't come together for me. I went like 1-X and ended up dropping at like round 4. I played a lot of like combo decks, which are kind of difficult for Tron to compete against, depending on what they're doing. Had kind of a heartbreaker round 1 where tried to do my best to kind of play around the combo. Was playing versus like Devastation Druid, and you know, had an O Stone, cracked it, cleared their board, and then they had the Yeah, it's tough.
Postmortem Lunge
to bring it back there. They drew it and they had the Vizier and they just were able to kind of all go off the entirety in that turn. So it's like, cool. And it's just, you know, that deck can sometimes give you trouble depending on what they're doing. And you know, ended up winning the next round, lost to the Mirror by like being a turn late on an Ulamog to, you know, lose to that, to die with literal like set up for Ulamog and Ulamog in my hand.
In my hand again.
Lost to Jeskai Control and Jeskai's Stoneblade, Jeskai Control.
Yeah, like that's what it is now. All those decks are just Stoneblade.
And lost to them in turns. Just by bricking off, just by not finding an actual threat to put away the game. But yeah, that was my last round. So not too successful of a day, unfortunately. I still think Tron's a good choice. It's still a very powerful deck. You can go over the top of people. And I think, you know, I don't think that's a wrong place to sort of be in the format.
Yeah, no, it definitely was like feasting on itself a little bit in that tournament. And it'll remain a good call. I don't know if it's actually going to be tier one right now, but it's always strong enough to just win a tournament. So
yeah.
I want to at least mention Dave, former Yo host of the show, played Burn and won his first round against Mono Red Prowess by milling his opponent out. Yes. So that was a cool thing we got to see. Many Dragon's Claws and Core Firewalkers were involved. Yes. So that was cool. But Dave started off 4-0, and that was that. He did not do very well after that, unfortunately. We both had some frustration with that. I played Bant Stoneblade, which I think I mentioned in the tail end of the cast last week, which is it was a list taken directly from Saffron Olive. Now Saffron Olive more known for his brews, but he had posted a number of 5-0 finishes of the deck, and I think he'd be the first one to say he's not a master player. And I was like, well, Saffron Olive is just crushing fools with this, and I'm going to try and play it. And I did crush the fools with it. I got to say, I went 5-3. I was 5-1 and had a chance to win it in and could not pull out against a rather unique build of Grixis Death Shadow that had 4 copies of Lightning Skelemental. So that happened. And I lost to Jund in the last round. And 3 of the non-gamiest games ever. Like, he destroyed my hand game 1 and I drew 0 spells and died. And then game 2, I got ahead with the Stoneforge, and he drew no interaction spells and died. And then game 3, I mulled and drew no spells and died. It was like, we were done with our round in 10 minutes. It was like, oh, cool, have a good day. So, but the deck was very fun. Cards that overperformed were definitely, like, Force of Negation was very, very good with Stoneforge Mystic. I know all the U8X decks were playing that as well. I really did enjoy having the mana creatures, though, you know, Jund was definitely a force in the room, and you know, definitely Renin 6 is something to consider in the future. I had no mana creatures die to Renin 6 throughout the tournament, and there were a lot of them around, so that was probably not normal. The Exalted was a real way to do it. But I will say, looking at the deck, and if you're looking for a list, search for Saffron Olive. He posted a list a couple times with a sideboard guy, with a sideboard. It looks really mid-rangey and clunky. Like when you're considering where Modern was, and I went 2-0 against Tron in the first 2 rounds. Like, did not struggle against Tron. And I think with Force of Negation and Stoneforge Mystic being a real clock, it was kind of refreshing because I don't mind if Tron is a good deck, but I know that I can play white and green spells and have a chance against Tron without playing combo, then that makes me think that Modern has a chance to be in a fairly healthy place. And that's good because it hasn't been healthy in a while. So that made me happy. I played some really, really quality, fun games of Magic on Saturday. And I haven't played in a regular tournament most of the summer. You know, as I said before, I bought a house and been mostly working on that. And I think, you know, Morgan has said a couple times that he has not played as much competitively. So it felt good to get out and sort of stretch the wings a little bit. And it was just fun. It was a real blast to play. And I'm pretty sure that Morgan lent me some Forge Mystics, and I do not see myself giving them back anytime soon.
Yeah, we're going to figure that one out.
Yeah, they're going to coalesce into me. Me collection. That's what I meant.
Yeah. I mean, as long as some ducats coalesce into my hands.
Into your hand. This is how it'll work. It was a fun time playing. I'm sad I missed top eight. Definitely based on the format a little bit. I think the sideboard is a little bit off. And that's also just Modern. Like, I had a lot of cards for like humans, and humans was there, but I never played against it.
Humans. Bad?
I don't know about bad, but I think it's in a similar space. I'm gonna be honest. I think it's in a similar space that Tron is. Like, yeah. It's linear, trying to do a very specific thing that is still powerful. But man, like against like Tron, Stoneforge Mystic, like on turn two, just gave me a clock where I can play a defense because Blue Eye Control can counter all the spells that Tron does. But when they run out of counter spells, they couldn't consistently win the game.
Yeah,
Stoneforge Mystic changes that. Curio, it fixes that problem. And the same is true for humans as well. The decks that can play a wrath spell or clear the board, they couldn't always race what comes off the top of the deck. But when you add in, you know, Batterskull, to be quite honest, well, then you give those decks a little bit of play. And Stoneforge Mystic is just a weird card because, like, you know, for humans, they can bounce it, sure. You know what I mean? But it gets around Thalia as far as, like, Thalia's making things more expensive, and like bouncing it, unless you're going to win right then, it's not a great plan. Yeah, because they're just going to get a sword now to go with it.
That's true.
So I think humans is still strong. I think the problem for humans was that at least at our MCQ, you know, we'll talk about the open here, Jund was well represented, and I wish that I had some Celestial Purges in my last two rounds. Like, it felt like that was a big gap in my board, is not having some number of Celestial Purge or way to deal with just you know, I getting attacked by a Gurmag Angler, a Death Shadow, or a Renin Six, or a Liliana of the Veil, like, because like against Grixis Death Shadows, where Force Negation for the first time felt not great during the day because their bigger creatures were, those were the things I wanted to counter when I was tapping low and I couldn't. And then like against like Jund, like you want Force for some of the mana or for some of the Planeswalkers, but you need balanced cards that aren't purely reactive. So I definitely play a little bit different sideboard. I would not play the Sword of Shadow or Sin of Mutant Steel if you looked
at that deck. Yeah, it's too cute.
It was too cute, for sure. I played against two other Stoneforge decks and went 1-1 against them. And I boarded and sword both times. And multiple times, like, I used it as a counterspell bait or I just didn't search for it. It was just not... It did not feel like the right card.
Gotcha.
So, Snow stuff was cool, though. And I liked playing the Kotal. That was nice. It was good against that Shadow as well.
Oh yeah,
just being like, hey, here's just like a death touch, right?
Yeah.
So,
cool. Yeah, I do. Let's like walk into talking about Dallas then. So there was the Star City Games Open in Dallas, and it was Modern, obviously solo Modern, not team Modern or anything like that, and it was won by Harlan Fear playing Four Color Wurza, defeating Dylan Donegan. Playing Burn, and I don't know if they played. I know that Dylan Donegan had to catch a flight, so this is definitely how the tournament results were printed out, but I don't know if they actually played against each other or not. But rounding out the top eight, we have Titan Shift, piloted by Ross Miriam, Grixis Death Shadow, piloted by Russell Lee, Burn in both 5th and 6th, piloted by Zan Syed and Collins Mullen. 7th was Rakdos Midrange, piloted by John Lim. And then lastly, Sam Birkenbile playing Mono Green Tron.
Should we point out that Zan Syed, Colin Mullen, Colin Collins Mullen, sorry, buddy,
and Dylan Dolligan
are all this on the same team.
Their team,
the
exact Lotus same, Box.
Yeah, and they play the exact same 75.
For so there is some people. I know that the Arena Decklist podcast was like, I don't know how people would be playing Burn this weekend, but it was successful. It definitely preyed on the decks that were trying to beat the Stoneforge decks, sure.
If you said, if Tron was a tier zero deck or level zero deck for this weekend, then Burn makes a lot of sense. But yo, same for Jund. If you think that Jund is, play some Burn. You know, it's pretty interesting. And I think even some of the Stoneforge decks. You know, I played against Burn and I beat Burn, but I mean, I beat Burn by the skin of my teeth. And yeah. I think that, like, you know, I didn't have things like timing reinforcements and stuff like that. And I have to assume that a number of Stoneforge decks cut on, you know, I had Core Firewalkers, which were nice, and Knights of Autumn, but they cut maybe on some Burn hate because they thought Stoneforge would be enough. But a good sideboard plan, you know, can get through Batterskull pretty consistently.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have to imagine that this list is playing... Okay, three Smash Smithereens. All right.
Yeah.
I was going to say three to four, but you're playing three Smashes and three Skull Cracks as well. So, like, you could definitely have a lot of things in your sideboard that are just like, no.
Yeah.
The shutdown, like, the Batterskull plan pretty handily. And even something like Deflecting Bomb, like, that's pretty narrow. You probably wouldn't put it in against your you know, Stoneforge Mystic matchups, but it's theoretically a thing that's just like, cool, here's four damage. And it stops the damage from them, and Deflecting Palm deals the damage. Okay, so I just want to make sure that Black Gate doesn't work still. All right.
Yeah, it's prevent and deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like these burn lists are just solid. The five Horizon lands, I think, are super important. Like those have shown themselves to be gross additions to Burn. They really have. Yeah, getting so many more looks at cards.
You just want more cards.
Yeah, absolutely. So now these are solid decks, and I think Burn is always the kind of deck that people can beat Burn if they want to beat Burn. That's not to say like these three players obviously very well made a good choice with it and preyed on this weekend, but you know, maybe we can weather the storm.
For sure. You could definitely do like a lot of things to prepare for Burn if you expect that to be the deck that has a huge uptick in the meta. So it's not unbeatable. I think the deck that kind of surprised me to see kind of being successful and doing well and being a deck that's not necessarily very popular is Titan Shift.
It's not the deck I thought you were about to say, but go ahead.
It's just that, you know, it's kind of a big mana deck that fell out of favor, like really, really hard. And it shows up every once in a while and goes, hey, I'm doing stuff. But this weekend definitely seemed like a good weekend to be like, I am going to be playing just this pretty linear combo deck. I'm going to, you know, be able to pretty consistently like execute on what I want to do and not care about what you're doing for the most part. I do definitely think it's kind of weird to see this deck and it specifically being very good at dealing like what 17 damage, 18 damage. Yeah. And then like, you know, Batterskull being in the format or like incidental life gain. Now, most of the time you might be doing that before Batterskull is ever irrelevant. So, and not to say like, you know, Rustmere played like four Lightning Bolts. So it's like you had interaction as well.
Yeah, and like historically, people were talking about this, you know, decks are going over the top with Primeval Titan. We're good against, you know, different forms of the Stoneforge decks. So
yeah, and standard.
And standard. So like, you know, if people were trying to play more mid-rangey like I was doing, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't get to play, I'd have to play against Titan Shift any rounds, but like looking at this list, like I would be glad that I had Force Negation, but like once again, it offers, you know, when your combo piece is a creature, it gets trickier for that deck to deal with. So
yeah,
you can path it or whatever, but like it gets trickier. So yeah, I'm not super surprised at this. I do think that either Titan Shift or Amulet are going to see an uptick in play in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. So I mean, I like the deck. I like it a little bit better than Tron. If you want to play like a big over the top mana deck, I think that you might lean towards playing this because you can sideboard against a lot of different kinds of decks and strategies. Like you can play Damping Sphere, like Rosted in his sideboard. You get access to red cards, which is pretty important.
Right.
and you get access to like Lightning Bolt. And maybe that's not as important as some people might consider, but no, like,
it's important.
It is like it's that piece of interaction that you can have to shut down a Stoneforge, or have a little bit of extra reach, and just close out a game. So. But yeah, I like a lot about what this deck is doing. I've played Titan Shift before in you know, various tournaments and stuff like that. So I'm definitely a fan. If I had to play a modern tournament sometime soon, I might consider playing this deck for sure. I wanted to point out the Field of the Dead being a new addition to these lists, which is really cool, and it gives you a just another option to win the game.
Right.
And I think like that's a fairly nifty addition to these lists. So
yeah, it's kind of like, oh, I can scape shift, but I can't maybe I'll ultimately kill you, but I can make all these tutus in addition.
It's for if they have like Witchbane Orb stuff like that. I was like, it's there for something. I know they talked about it a lot. Ley line, exactly. Yeah. So that's just like a great new avenue for this deck to kind of pursue to win the game. And I think that's a really nifty addition. So realistically, this deck's not that expensive.
I mean, it's not that bad. Honestly, a couple of these decks aren't that bad. If you look at Burn.
Yeah, for sure.
Or I guess I'm looking at Burn again. The deck I was surprised about was Grixis Death Shadow. There were two total copies in the top 25, but sure. One in top four here played by Russell Lee. And I thought it was kind of interesting. You see a return to, like, there's a Jace Vryn's Prodigy in here. But otherwise, it's a pretty standard list. A lot more Fatal Pushes than Lightning Bolts, which you're considering Jund and, like, Stoneforge and things like that. And also it can kill the Germ Token consistently. But I was surprised with this because I did not think this deck was well-positioned. And like I said, I lost to it playing for Top 8. A little bit different build, so the Lightning Skelementals being there. But... I was sort of surprised because, like, I don't know. I don't know how well this deck is still situated in the meta. But it'll be interesting to see. Because here's, like, I like Grixis Death Shadow. I have that deck. So if it's good again, then, like, that's cool. It's like having more playable decks. But I thought it was interesting to see. So.
Yeah, I know that one of the tournaments over the weekend on Magic Online, the finals was definitely a Grixis Death Shadow mirror.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So it's like, I think the death of that deck or that archetype is a little bit
it always is like that, but it's always not as bad as you think it is, but it just, I don't know. I will say I saw Plague Engineer do a ton of work out of the sideboard of these decks at the MCQ, so that helps as well. We should at least mention also the Rakdos Midrange deck by John Lim, because this seems to be like a progression of what Mardu Tokens, you know, Mardu Pyromancer was. Now that we don't have Faithless Looting, these creatures are interesting. Four Dreadheart Arcanist, 4 Seasoned Pyromancer, 2 Hazoret the Fervent, 3 Bedlam Reveler, 2 Chandra Acolyte of Flame, which is the 3 mana Chandra, 3 Liliana of the Veil, and just a ton of spells. Also main deck Blood Moon. So this is definitely like this is what Mardu Pyromancer becomes, and this is kind of cool.
Yeah. Just
playing a lot of cards I like. Man, I love casting some Hazoret, let me tell you.
I mean, who doesn't?
Nicol Bolas?
Probably.
Yeah. Spear.
Yeah, this is one of those decks that's like, it's so expensive. Unless you owned all these cards already, then it's like,
oh no, sure. I was just like, if you had Mardu Pyromancer,
yeah,
you could play this deck and not feel too bad.
Yeah, sure.
No. But yeah, I don't want to tell you other than that. Like, sorry. Yeah, here's another Blackleaf Eclipse deck. All the other decks that you want to play with it kind of got banned. So. So that's Jund.
Yeah.
Looking around the top 25, there's a couple other interesting lists. There's Orzhov Smallpox in 11th place. Or, sorry, 9th place.
Yeah.
Which is a Stoneforge. Like, it's a Stoneblade deck.
That is the highest placing Stoneforge deck. I mean, obviously, we didn't see a Stoneforge list crack the top 8. And I think that... I don't know if that's, surprising to people or not, but...
I mean, there's 3 of them in the top 16, though.
Sure, sure, sure.
So, like, it definitely... I think this was a good showing for Stoneforge. Like, both the tournament I played and what we saw Magic over the weekend, like, I think that, got to give some credit to Shaheen Serrani. He was talking for a long time that it wasn't too good. And it looks like it's going to be playable. and not too good. Now, granted, someone could find the deck list, but I'm still excited early. For that. I'm excited that if it's just a, you know, another deck that's good, because that gives me hope for Splinter Twin, because it could just be another deck that's good.
Leave me alone. They can't. They
Morgan got my real dad.
They let Splinter Twin's cellmate go, which was Stoneforge Mystic, and someone's got to be in that cell.
That's fair. There's a Merfolk list in 19th place, and they had me thinking, I wonder if we're getting the Azorius Merfolk list, because Merfolk with Stoneforge Mystic sounds kind of fine, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
And you can play the Mariner, the Changeling.
Oh, yeah.
In blue-white. So,
you sure can.
There you go, you know, Corbin Osler, like, yeah, that's do it. For you. And we definitely have to mention 22nd place Allie Warfield's deck, because she had a pretty good tournament run.
Yeah, she had a bit of a heartbreaker towards the end of the day. So like that's rough. But
she was definitely the winner of social media for the tournament. Yeah. So also, I mentioned this in our Discord, but like after we saw what food was, I immediately saw her tweet, and she was like, "Well, now I got to win the invitation to become a food token." I was like, "Yes, of course, is what you have to do. It's so perfect." So.
It is perfect. But yeah, she played Celestine Eldrazi, which is a list that was suggested by Ryan Overturf in the What We Play column on Star City. And this deck is definitely wild. It's very reminiscent of sort of the like Bant Eldrazi a little bit, because of like some of the creatures you're playing along with like Eldrazi Displacer,
right.
But you're also like playing just a bunch of different stuff. You have like the Karn package in there as well, so you get to attack your opponent on a lot of different angles. So you get to, like, you know, you get to play the Karn, the Great Creator, and protect it with your, you know, lower cost Eldrazi's, and potentially win the game that way. You get to play Stoneforge Mystic and go for that angle. And sometimes you just also just get to beat them down with Reality Smashers. So you have a lot of different ways that you can go about winning the game, which I think is pretty cool.
And you can switch plans on a dime, which is important. Like, Ancient Stirrings here is very good, but also like it's the fake out of the century.
Oh my gosh.
And then just like you get that Karn the Great Creator and flash it to him, and you're like, okay, cool. And then like they hold up, you know, like their Force of Negation, whatever, and you're like, actually, I changed my mind, here's Reality Smasher. And you're like, but
why? Or just like the Rubbins and be like, cool, a Thought-Knot's here,
yeah, right,
get him.
So yeah, it's pretty great. And even like you're playing a bunch of these kind of, you know, these equipment that are okay targets for Karn the Great Creator's tick up, just like, I'll take it for four.
Yeah,
I'll take it for five. I mean, so I really like this deck, and she obviously did pretty well. So
yeah,
but it was a unique one. I don't know why I'm celebrating an Eldrazi deck, but it was cool. It was like a bunch of great taste and tastes great together.
It just reminds you of the good Bant Eldrazi, man.
Just rebuild it and put Stoneforge in it.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
Okay,
Stoneforge and Karn.
Okay.
I don't think you. I think if you're gonna play that deck, you're probably just playing this deck.
Yeah, it's probably true.
I don't think you need Drowner of Hope, though.
But I want.
Though I do have to say, Stubborn Denial sounds pretty great.
Yeah, not wrong.
So got a lot of cards that make that a real thing that you can do. So just saying.
Yeah.
So.
You want to take a quick look at the Classic?
Yeah, so the Classic was won by Dredge, which is why we should probably take a look at it.
Yeah, definitely like Dredge, but didn't they ban that deck? Nope, they did not ban Tomescour.
Yeah,
so.
You can't ban Dredge, man. Dredge exists. So Dredge just shifted a little bit, so they're playing four Tomescours, which is obviously worse than Faithless Looting, but it still gets the job done here. You're playing obviously blue mana. Now you have like a Steam Vents, and you still had your multicolor lands, and you're still like trucking along that way, and you're still doing Dredge things. If anything, you can now cast maybe your Narcomoebas and Prized Amalgams a little bit easier, just the slightest bit easier. But yeah, you can't ever count this deck out. They like it in the format, clearly, and it's still going to be a thing that exists, but even changing something like Faceless Looting clearly shows you that you can't like be assuming that like you're just gonna have to not worry about Graveyard Hate or something like that. Right. Like it's just always gonna exist. So, but yeah, it was piloted by Jake Perales. Yeah, Perales, yeah. Probably. And then sort of the rest of the top eight here is Eldrazi Tron, then Burned, Jund, Titan Shift, Jund, Orzhov Stoneblade, a Burn, Titan Shift, Burn. So
yeah, there are two more copies of Merfolk in the top 16, which I think is pretty interesting.
That, you know, is interesting. And you, theoretically, you know, if you're going to be playing Merfolk, then you get to play Spreading Seas, which is, you know, good against, you know, Tron, obviously. So if you're preying on that, then, like, that makes sense.
I mean, they're all playing for Force Negation. I said Force Negation overperformed for me this weekend.
Yeah, so that's true as well.
Makes like, sense. It's certainly interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you get to do some pretty consistent things with it, and you are the first list that I'm seeing here is a blue green list for
I think they're all
blue green now, yeah, for Mistbinder and Speaker as just like, you know, pretty right. solid additions to the deck. Mistbinder,
I really would be interested to see what y'all would just like blue white with Stoneforge Mystic. Like I think that you'll just play the Mariner, whatever, what's it called?
Unsettled Mariner,
and you play Stoneforge Mystic and then pretty much the Lord packages. I think that might be good.
Yeah, maybe
worth looking into. Maybe
you know, it's a Merfolk that has a similar effect to Great Glass Spinner,
right?
You know, so it's just maybe worth trying. I mean, obviously, and like getting access to something like Path to Exile can be pretty
also
potent.
Interesting. Yeah.
But
do you want to talk the Standard Classic at all?
No.
Okay. I shout out to Dylan Hand. Kethis combo is a real deck that showed up right
it's,
here at the
yeah
end.
It's just like the most popular deck in Standard. It's completely busted apparently, so
yeah, it's crazy how busted a bunch of decks got all of a sudden. Like yeah, like Corset came out and it was like, you know what, let's just break this wide open for like 2 months.
You know what, okay,
yeah, you know, no, it's
okay,
fine.
Go for it,
that's cool. You know,
we're not doing cool. It
you know, sometimes you got to take the car out for a spin, you know what I mean, like that keeps yeah. it nice and clean in the garage and you've got to every now and then.
Right, you know, we're not doing it for the entirety of the format. We're doing it towards the end, and you can participate if you want, and if you don't, then wait for rotation.
There it is.
So I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But that's going to be everything for competitive, and I think everything for the show here for this week. If you want to reach out to us, you certainly can. We have various forms of communication. We have a Twitter. It's your NSTEP, and then when you add us, it'll be at your NSTEP. We have a Gmail account, at your NSTEP at gmail.com. We also have Facebook, facebook.com/@yournstep. If you are listening to us via a podcast application that allows you to leave a rating or review, we would really appreciate it if you did so. Really do think that we're a 5-star podcast, so we hope you do too. If you're listening to us via Legit MTG, thank you so much for picking up the show. Check out some of the other articles they have on there, and of course, their online store. If you are listening to us via MTGcast, welcome back. We're glad to be back on the host. We're glad that we're back on here, isn't it? We know it's a pretty big deal for a lot of different people to listen to a lot of different Magic the Gathering podcasts. Thank you so much to, of course, our sponsor, Comic Town. You can check them out at worldofcomictown.com. Also, thank you so much to our patrons. And you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/@yournstep. That's going to be everything for us this week, and you have a great one. Bye.